Hello, it's Clinton Power here from the Mind Body Training Institute, and it's my great pleasure to be speaking today with Kathy Rudland. She's a licensed clinical social worker with over 30 years' experience and is the author of the fabulous book Ghost Mothers. Hello, Kathy, how are you?
Hello, Clinton. I'm great. I'm happy to be here with you today.
I'm so excited to be speaking with you today, and this topic I think is really fascinating. It's something that is just not talked about, and we're talking about the relationships between mothers and the pain of having a mother who wasn't really there, and specifically related to narcissistic mothers, because that's the topic of interest here. But before we dive into that, I'd love to know, how did you get into this area? It's such a fascinating area.
The way that I got into this area is that it is based on my own personal experience. I grew up with a mother that I was not able to connect with, and there was such a strong longing for me to feel close to her, to feel loved by her. So I spent many, many years growing up asking myself, why doesn't she love me? Why don't we have this connection with each other? I even went into the mental health field, I think. I didn't realize it at the time, but I can look back and see that I think I went into this field trying to figure it out, trying to figure out what it was about my family that just didn't feel right. I actually didn't figure it out being in the mental health field, but I at least got some information that was helpful to me down the road as I continued this journey to feel whole and loved. Long story short, the healing that I was able to do in this regard was so significant, and it's been so profound, that that's how I've developed this passion to want to help other people in their healing. It really makes a difference.
It is such a common story, isn't it? I know myself and many of my colleagues, we were all kind of drawn into the therapy field because there was something lacking in our own histories, or we've wanted to resolve something.
Right.
Of course, the wounded healer is such a common phrase, but it's very apt in this case. Can I ask, was your mother narcissistic? Was that
Yes.
Part of the issue for you? Yes.
No, that was a significant part of the issue, yes.
And what were the first early signs that something was lacking or amiss for you as you were growing up?
You know, that's a hard question to answer. It seems like it should be simple, but it's actually a hard question to answer. I think I can give you some examples. I think that it's different for everyone. I think one of the main things that stands out is that she felt different. My relationship with my mother felt different than a lot of friends that I had. In fact, as I was thinking about this, I had my best friend lived across the street, and I loved spending the night at her house when I was a little girl. And part of what I loved is her mother always had this ritual of warm milk and graham crackers. And she would sit with us, and it always made me feel warm, and it always made me feel I liked the attention, and I always went to bed just feeling really happy. And that's an example of what I was not getting at home and what I was not getting from my mother.
That is such a common experience, isn't it, Kathy? I hear that from many of my clients over the years, that it's actually when they have an experience of a different family or a different parent, often a friend like you've mentioned,
mm-hmm.
and suddenly there's this stark contrast that the child realizes, hang on, this is very different from what happens at my house or in
yes.
my relationship with my parent.
Yes, and there's a sense of, I would really rather be spending time over here.
Yes.
And I was just thinking, yeah. I'm remembering that as I got older, I had another friend and I spent a lot of time, I ate dinner at her house a lot. And again, it was the same kind of dynamic. There was a lot more connection, a lot more love, a lot more attention at other people's houses than there was at my own.
Yeah, sometimes those relationships with other relatives or parents can be so nurturing, and they can even fill a deficit, can't they, in the primary parent relationship. Has that been your experience?
That is such a good point. And it's one I want to make sure that we really stress. It's one of the first questions that I ask people when I work with them. Given that you had this kind of mothering or lack of mothering, were there other people in your life where it was different, where you felt more connected, where you felt more seen? And that I think that can make all of the difference. In my own case, I had an aunt, my Aunt Bessie, who came and visited us in the summers, and she thought I was special, and we did jigsaw puzzles together, and we walked around the neighborhood. And that experience was so important to me, to have that kind of nurturing. In fact, it's funny, I look at pictures of her and she was really quite old, and she looks quite old, but my childhood memories of her, she's not old at all. She's just this kind of angel, you know, who dropped in, and I just love spending time with her.
That's a great example, Kathy. Yeah. I want to now kind of drill down into what is the experience of children who have a narcissistic mother, a mother that they're not able to bond with. Can we talk about the specifics? What is the lived experience for these people?
I think the first thing I need to say is, well, it's not good. I can summarize straight up by saying it's not good, but there's a whole range of experience, and particularly for daughters when it's a narcissistic mother, because she's their same-sex role model. And so there's a lot of layers to this. For a lot of people, there's a sense perhaps that something is just off, but you can't really put your finger on it. Kind of like we were talking about earlier, it just feels better at other people's houses than it does at your house. The problem obviously is that for children, we don't have much to compare it to until we do start to get older and spend time with other people. In my case, the characteristics that my mother had that were difficult for me were that she was quite cold, and that she was unpredictable. And so those things obviously contributed to not feeling like we were connected, and that not feeling that she was particularly loving towards me. In fact, I was often told that I was disappointing her. So these are the kind of themes that people will experience in these kind of homes. It can be very lonely. There can be a sense of emptiness that people will bring into adulthood because they're just not connecting with the person who's really probably the most important person to them in their early years. And overall, there's an essence of mom's not really tuned in or concerned about what's happening to me or what I need. She's kind of in her own world. She's getting her own needs met. You know, as an example, I can remember times trying to share something with my mother or trying to get advice from her. And very quickly, the conversation would turn to her talking about herself.
So, Kathy, you're referring to the self-absorption, being a parent who's self-absorbed or very consumed with their own concerns, and the child is a secondary concern.
Right. And I think it also highlights the lack of empathy that's there. You know, I think she would get bored pretty soon with me telling her my stories.
Yes.
It just was not important.
You're really touching on some of those core characteristics of the narcissistic personality, aren't you? Criticism, self-absorption, lack of empathy.
Right.
What else are some of those behaviors and characteristics? Have I missed any there?
I think those are the big ones. I think probably what I want to add to that is that it can be, your experience with her can be very confusing, because there often is a real range in how she responds to you. And so that's confusing and also frustrating. And my mother would have times when her response would be reasonable. And so that, I'd get really excited about that. I would want more of that. And I think this is what happens for most people. And then other times I could try to speak with her and feel that I was being completely ignored. So I think confusion is a big part of it. A sense of feeling empty because you're not really being guided to grow up. And that's such an important part of being a child. And then there's mothers who are narcissistic mothers who can be quite manipulative in their efforts to try to get what they need from you. And that sense of being controlled certainly doesn't feel good to a child.
So what I hear you say, Kathy, as well, is there's sometimes there's an inconsistency, is that right? That you might get a taste of nurturing and emotional kind of nurturance and support and guidance, and then other times it's taken away. Does that tend to be a characteristic?
It does. I call it breadcrumbs. It's those little moments that feel good that I think keep us coming back for more, because we want more of that. Now, one of the things that I've found interesting is that that's not the case for everyone. In my case, I kept trying, but there's some people who give up on their mothers at a pretty young age. They get a sense that this is all there is, and they don't even keep trying. And, you know, I've heard people 5 or 6 years old saying, I gave up on my mother. I just think that's so sad.
That is so sad.
Yeah, but they get that message at a very young age. This is all there is.
So for a child that perhaps gives up very early on like that, Kathy, how do they kind of navigate life going forward? Would that lead to developing a very strong independence, not learning not to rely or need other people?
I think it can. I think honestly that there's positive and negative characteristics that can develop as a result. I think at the end of the day, we're talking about people who end up raising themselves, essentially, which is not the way this is supposed to happen. That not getting that love or nurturing or guidance, it is a pretty significant wound for most people.
Absolutely. We're really talking about emotional neglect here, aren't we? I mean, sometimes I imagine there can be physical neglect, but can you say something some more about that? What tends to present? Is it emotional neglect? Do you see physical neglect? Can they be combined?
Well, I think it's important to keep, absolutely, would be my short answer. The longer answer is we know that narcissism is a spectrum disorder, so that we have everything from a mother perhaps with just some mild narcissistic traits. So perhaps someone who is neglectful or a little bit cold, can't connect too well, but in other ways she's doing all right, to the full-blown narcissistic personality disorder where, you know, the parent is just really not wired to be able to provide the nurturing and the attention that the child needs. And so we get everything from what you were saying earlier, I think, some sense of neglect to physical abuse, a lot of controlling, a lot of criticizing. It can be a very, very difficult way to come into the world. With nothing to compare it to, it makes it so difficult for a child. And I know that was my experience as I got older and would try to explain a little bit to other people what was going on. It's such a foreign experience for most people that that wasn't a very satisfactory exchange. And so I started to feel like it was just me, and maybe I was the one who was doing something wrong. Yes. Yeah. And I think the narcissistic mother plays into that in many ways. The narcissistic mother is very unlikely to accept any responsibility for her behavior. There's so much denial, and very eager to blame you, to tell you that it's your fault.
Yes. I think this is one of the big challenges, isn't it, Kathy? Particularly, I'm thinking about the age of a child and the impact on their emotional development as well. But often, you know, children don't have the capacity or perspective that adults do, where as an adult you could stand back and say, oh, you know, this person has a deficit, or this person has a mental illness, or they don't have the capacity to love or care or be consistent. We can do that as adults. As children, we don't have that level of awareness, do we? Can you say something about the impact?
Well, I think what you say is so true. That can come later, and it can be so validating and so important. to recognize that we're talking about a mental illness here that made this mother really not capable of providing what she needed to as a mother. But as a child, you're just doing the best you can with what you have to work with.
So what are some of the typical behaviors or experiences that you've noticed in adults when they do present in your therapy room? And if I can share, one of the things I've noticed is that often the adults I work with, when there has been some kind of a childhood emotional neglect, whether it's through a narcissistic parent or some other issue, that they often don't have a lot of memories from childhood, but also they maybe sometimes not even negative or positive, but there's kind of big gaps in the memory. And I'm curious, is that a characteristic you've seen in the patients you work with?
I do see that. It's interesting that you brought that up. And I think to some extent, we have to assume that some of those bad memories get compartmentalized because they have to, because they're so painful. Unfortunately, for some people, there's so much abuse that, you know, they may disassociate. And then, you know, that provides an explanation for why the memories are so foggy. I have had the experience that some people that can't initially remember things are able to remember things later. And I don't think that they necessarily, one of the things that I think is so important in working with this is not to traumatize people, but to be able to capture the essence of what their experience was, which is really quite different. So I think what I'm saying is they don't necessarily have to remember it, but their sense of what happened and perhaps their sense of what they didn't get is what's the most important in terms of moving forward.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear, Kathy. Sometimes with these clients, I've noticed they've said, oh, my childhood was fine. It was very ordinary, nothing unusual. But as we start to dig deeper over time, there are gaps in the memory, or they can't recall. Sometimes even very simple things like celebrating birthdays, special events, times of feeling special, where you would imagine in other children that would just be par for the course. They can recall birthday parties or Christmas celebrations or a time they did well on an exam and mom and or dad were very pleased and happy.
The happy memories, right?
Yeah.
Right. That's an interesting point, because holidays and some of the things that you mentioned are often not happy memories in narcissistic families. That's oftentimes when the narcissistic mother is at her worst, because the attention isn't really focused on her, because there's a lot going on. Sometimes, quite frankly, I think she's, jealous. Santa gets more attention than she does, or the child gets more attention, you know, at a graduation or something like that. So it's just kind of interesting piece when you're saying people don't remember some of these happy memories. It may be because they weren't happy. It may be because the narcissistic mother was particularly difficult in those settings.
Let's now talk about how do we work with clients who present in the therapy room, and perhaps, you know, you identify fairly early on that there's something missing here, that there was maybe some degree of difficulty of attachment and bond with the mother. Talk us through some of the first kind of initial steps that you go through, Kathy, when these clients present.
I think we need to keep in mind that healing is so possible from this type of mother. And I have worked with some people who initially want me to believe that they're so badly broken, that they've gotten so little in their younger years, that there's no hope for them. And I'm here to say that while I know it can feel that way, I've seen people make incredible strides. I myself am amazed at the extent of the healing and how profound it's been. And I think that's an important message for people to hear, that it can be painful. The process of working through it can be quite painful, but the results can be quite amazing. And I think one of the reasons that is so is because maybe one of the most difficult things that happens to a child with a narcissistic mother is they never really get to know themselves. They grow up not really having a voice. They have to find a way to work with or sometimes work around this mother the best they can, and so much of themselves gets pushed down, when in fact these should be the years that they're discovering who they are and what they're good at and what kind of things they would enjoy doing when they get older. So it's kind of an unfolding. It's in many ways almost like an adolescent development, which I think is kind of interesting. And so I think people should, and therapists should, get excited about how much growth and healing there can be when someone is able to say, yes, this did happen to me, and I want to learn how to put it in my past, and I want to learn how to, you know, what the lessons were and how to grow from it.
That's such a positive message, Kathy. I think I'm really glad you said that. I think it's very important for people to hear, and particularly because it is such a common experience.
Isn't that incredible? I will tell you, I just have to jump in. I really thought I was the only one this had ever happened to. I really did. And right. It's been incredible to me as I wrote my book and as I've done this work, it affects a lot of people. And I think it's so sad that we grow up thinking that we're the only ones suffering. This is really not an uncommon experience. I think it's an experience that people have just been very reluctant to talk about. And maybe part of that's because we didn't know how to make sense of it.
I think that's true. And it really has only been in recent years myself that I kind of came across this idea of childhood emotional neglect and what we're talking about, the difficulty in bonding with a mother, and then, of course, more specific issues like the narcissism spectrum. But for me, this has really transformed my practice because I realized there were so many clients over the years that were presenting as, oh, my childhood is normal, nothing extraordinary happened. And then understanding how some of these deficits come about and the impact on the child and then the developing adult, it's really helped me then help clients realize that this is actually something very significant that you weren't able to bond with your mother or your parents, and that there was an element of emotional neglect here that has really impacted you as an adult.
It can be incredibly liberating. And as I'm listening to you, I don't know that clients necessarily are hiding anything. I think this truly feels like their experience. I get a number of clients who come in and say, you know, my mother was awful and I'm trying to get past that. But some people, life just isn't working out for them and they don't make this connection to these earlier issues. And that's, again, I think a reason it needs to be talked about much more than it is currently.
Yes, I think that's very true, Kathy. Sometimes even simple questions I've asked clients like, did you have a parent that sat down with you and helped you through your homework? Or maybe even asked you about what you had to do, what you did that day, what you have to do tonight, what's coming up? You know, just simple things like interest, guidance, that kind of mentorship and support that we know is a part of good parenting. Often those children will say, no, my parents really or perhaps never asked about homework. They never sat down with me to help me with something I was difficult with. Sometimes even say, go away and work it out yourself.
I think those are such excellent questions to help get a much broader and probably more realistic understanding of what was happening in the family. I really like those questions. Too often therapists will say, how was your childhood? And I think that's such a broad question that it's most likely not going to get the answer you're looking for. But I really like that. The idea of, did you get help with homework? Did you were involved in cooking meals? Did you all eat together as a family? That really does start to develop a creative picture of what was really going on in the family and what was missing, even more importantly, perhaps. I think I was going to shift to maybe looking at some of the life issues that can present in our office for somebody that's grown up this way but hasn't made that connection. I think that we need to understand what a significant wound this is, in that it can be different for everyone. It can show up in different ways. Interestingly, one of the most common presenting problems that I see is people having problems in relationships. And I find that quite interesting. And I even have worked with a number of very high functioning clients where pretty much everything in their life is working. You know, their job's okay and they're pretty healthy and things are reasonably good. But in the relationship arena, it is a mess. And I don't think that's an accident at all. When that very first attachment is so unsatisfactory, when you learn about love in such distorted ways, I think it makes perfect sense that this is the result that we get. And then a corollary of that is people that will contact me because they're involved in a relationship with a narcissistic partner. And it is very interesting the number of people who actually had a narcissistic parent and did not realize it, and it's in these narcissistic relationships as an adult that it starts to come back and haunt them.
That is so fascinating, isn't it? I'm primarily a relationship therapist myself, and oh. I'm always fascinated by what attracts people together, and that it's almost like a replication of the past, isn't it? I see this so often that
yes.
They had a narcissistic parent, and then they somehow, and it must be an unconscious process, they attract a narcissistic partner.
Yes.
It's this replay of childhood all over again.
It is. It's so interesting, and it's really the last thing they need, but there it is.
Yes.
And I think it's really quite fascinating. I think at one level, there's such a high tolerance perhaps for this kind of behavior that at first it just seems, you know, that much out of the norm. But I think I agree with what you're saying. There is an unconscious belief, I think, that maybe this time it's going to be different. Maybe this time we're going to get it right and the person is going to love us in all of these ways that mom wasn't able to do. So I've, most of the time, not all of the time, but most of the time when someone is in a relationship with a narcissist, there's a narcissistic parent. Sometimes it can be a narcissistic grandparent, so that there's a family legacy of narcissism that no one talks about. But there's usually a reason that connection gets made.
Yes, often these things aren't accidents, are they? It's really incredible what attracts people. Have you found, Kathy, that having a narcissistic parent can actually promote narcissistic qualities in the child as they become an adult?
Absolutely. My experience has been that, I guess so the way I would put it is, there's a spectrum in that regard as well. I've seen everyone from, I am so worried that I'm going to be a narcissist that if I get a massage, I feel like I'm being selfish and focusing too much on myself, you know, which is obviously the extreme of, there's not going to be any narcissism in me. I'm going to be completely selfless, to someone who does take on those traits without really recognizing. I think they're modeling the parent. It makes sense. This is how the parent teaches their child to cope. And so it makes perfect sense for that to be what they take on and how they start to navigate the world.
I'm glad you've talked about that spectrum today. I think it's such an important aspect of this work as well, that we're not just talking about, you know, of course there's healthy narcissism and not the other extreme. We have NPD, don't we, which is very problematic, a severe mental illness that, you know, can impact people's mental and physical health enormously. And how do you, I do want to move on to healing. I think that's an important conversation. Before we go there.
It's the most important part.
How do you, is there some assessment that you do to kind of work out where someone is on that spectrum, or is that in the background, you're just quietly assessing how severe the narcissism that they experienced from their mother was?
For me, because I wrote a book on this and because my website talks all about it, if you contact me, you pretty much know that you have a narcissistic parent or you're in a narcissistic relationship. In other words, you're suffering in some way from a narcissistic relationship. So that obviously makes it a little easier for me than I think a therapist who's trying to figure out if this is maybe an issue for their client.
Yeah, you're attracting people specifically because they're seeking you out for that help. Yes.
I do. So that probably helps everybody
Yeah.
involved. What I want to say is that I have found that, and it's interesting because I wrote my book, which includes a number of healing strategies and techniques and resources that were helpful to me and that were helpful to people that I was working with. But after my book came out, I met Wendy Beharry and I learned about schema therapy. And I am now absolutely passionate about schema therapy as perhaps being the most effective approach to both understand and work with clients in this regard.
Why is schema therapy so, why do you think it is so valuable out of other approaches?
There's a number of reasons. I think it has to do with the fact that it can work directly with the childlike parts that are still inside of us that have not had the chance to heal, because these are the parts that will trigger difficult behavior and memories and emotions. And I really haven't come across any other therapy that gets into this to the extent that schema therapy does. I have seen deep, deep healing as a result of that. It helps calm the trauma of some of these experiences in ways that are very empowering. And it can work directly because it's based on CBT. So at its core, it's helping people understand that these patterns are there for a reason and that there's a way out, if that makes sense. That it's this child part that's being triggered, and that when we understand that and can meet the needs of that part, then things can look and feel very, very differently.
That's great, Kathy. One of the things that stood out to me from your book, and I love this idea, it was kind of like a six step framework, and each word started with R, which I loved. Recognize, release, refocus, restore, renovate, and rewrite. I just love this. It's almost like I want to have this as a sticky note on my computer. Can you just talk a little briefly about how that came about and what it means?
I think maybe the thing I want to get across more than anything is that the initial stages are so important to understand narcissism and the impact that this mother has had on you, and to grieve that you didn't get what you needed and wanted from her, to grieve that you probably didn't have a childhood, perhaps you were taking care of her, or perhaps you just weren't allowed to act like a child and run, jump, and play, and so forth. But at a certain point, it becomes, and that's the refocus point, it becomes about, it's not about the mother anymore. That's what I'm trying to say. It's about how you made sense of this and how you learned how to cope and how it may have kept you from being all that you can be. And that's where I get really excited about people finally discovering themselves and what they're capable of and putting this in their past, in learning more about what they're capable of. And then also, obviously, being able to, if they choose to, be a better parent themselves, be in a relationship where they bring more than they are able to. Because my sense, it was my personal experience and it is my experience with most of the clients, is people just get stuck. There's just this yuck from the past and we don't know what to do with it. And our parent won't tolerate talking about it or any sense of responsibility. So what do we do with that? And I think that's what we can provide people that they've probably never had before, is a chance to work through it, to have it acknowledged that it really wasn't okay, to look at the needs that didn't get met and find ways that they can get them met as an adult.
What I love about this framework, Kathy, is such a positive message. And then after refocus, you talk about restoring your confidence, your emotional strength, using self-knowledge, renovating, really having a complete shift on the way you perceive yourself, and rewriting a new life script. That is just wonderful. Can you say a little bit about rewriting your life script?
So how cool is that, huh? I think some of this is a reaction to, and I can't tell you how many clients have said this to me, and I'll be honest, I said this to myself. I can't change the past. I can't change her. Seems to me it's kind of a done deal. And so the idea of rewriting our own script is realizing that as the child that we once were, we didn't really have much choice. You know, we were born into this family, we had this difficult mother, and we coped and we did the best that we could. And I'm always amazed at how much strength people have to get through that. And obviously some get through it better than others. But when people tell me, like I was saying to you earlier, I'm so broken, I just really have a hard time buying that, because I don't think people are broken if they've managed to navigate this kind of landscape. So part of the work that I do is to help people see their strengths and to understand that now it really is up to them to decide what happens next and what they're going to do. In other words, it's the next chapters of their life.
That's so inspiring. And Kathy, clearly therapy is you know, for many people, an important part of the healing process here. But what other resources can you suggest to people who recognize, perhaps even later in life, that they had a mother who was narcissistic? Is therapy the kind of primary treatment you would recommend?
Well, you know, I do have a certain bias because I am a therapist. I think that for most people, it probably is some type of therapy, some type of, I mean, this is a pretty significant wound. I've certainly met people and talked with people who have found other ways. I think anything that helps you grow and learn about who you are. Just as an aside, as a teenager, I went on Outward Bound, which is a wilderness therapy program. There's the word therapy. I don't think they would have, it's an outdoor program. And it's all about what are you capable of and working with other people and understanding that you can do so much more than you perhaps believe that you can. And that kind of experience, without knowing it at the time, I still draw on that. And I was 16 years old when I went on that. So that kind of, I think, maybe I'm not so feeling so good, but I'm going to go out and do it anyway. I think that can be that can shift our lives in ways maybe we don't understand and maybe we don't need to, but just to keep moving forward and to maybe test ourselves in ways that we've never done.
What a fantastic program. It sounds like it had an outdoor focus, a teamwork focus, but the side effect was it was therapeutic as well, because it's building the self-esteem and confidence and identity of young people.
We also spent 2 days alone in the woods on something they called Solo. And wasn't that an interesting experience? We had a whistle. If things got really bad, you could blow your whistle. And I was determined not to do that. But those kind of experiences really do help us understand who we are and who we can be. It was life-changing.
What do you see are the benefits of healing from having a narcissistic mother? People that undertake this work as adults, what are some of the changes and benefits you've observed in the people you've worked with?
It's interesting. When I wrote my book, well, for a couple of reasons, but the most significant were, first of all, to validate the experience of anyone that was going through this, that this really is a thing, if that makes sense. People so often think they're overreacting or they're unfairly judging their mother. So it was to be validating. It was to help people who wanted other friends or family members to understand what they had been through. And it's just so that we don't continue to pretend that this isn't a problem that's out there. So I wrote the book, I shared my own experience, and I shared the experiences of many other people. And that, and then at a certain point, I was starting to bum myself out. So I had certain questions that people were answering and contributing to the book. And so I challenged people with the very question that you're asking, which is, most of these people were fairly far along in their own healing, to come up with a list of the gifts of a ghost mother, the gifts of having had this childhood, but then having learned from it and moved through it. So I'm just going to share some of the things that people shared with me. It took a while, and it seems a little counterintuitive, but I think if you can think about it this way, it really makes a difference when you're doing the work and doing the grieving and so forth, to know that this really pays off in ways that you can't even imagine when you start out. So some of the things that we have on this list, and this is in the last chapter of my book, include: I'm more powerful than I ever thought possible. The compassion to accept that as humans, we are flawed and imperfect. That carrying around resentment and anger is harmful to me. To trust my instincts and intuition. Spiritually, it's helped me find my path. It's heightened my awareness of receiving affection that's genuine. Motivation to live a better life. I have choices about how I respond. Not to buy into limiting beliefs, that my journey is ongoing. I've learned resilience. I like all of these. It really helps us understand that this is a journey that's probably worth going on.
That is such an inspiring list to hear, Kathy. Thank you for sharing that. And let's, just to close off here, let's talk about your book, Ghost Mothers: Healing from the Pain of a Mother Who Wasn't Really There. What has been the reaction to your book so far?
It's been very positive. Most people that I hear from say it's really resonated with them. It's really told the story that they that they've lived and experienced but weren't really able to make sense of. One of the reasons that I share other people's stories is that we can all experience this so differently. And so I always ask people, because everybody got a new name, which person in this book, what experience did resonated with you the most? And then that right there tells me kind of what they've been through and what's happened. My intention was to share this at a very personal level and to offer a sense of hope, grow up this way and still have an amazing life.
Fantastic. You certainly have done that, Kathy. This has been such an inspiring chat I've had with you. For people that want to read your book, obviously it's available on Amazon. Is that right? The main place? Where else can they get your book from?
It's also on Barnes & Noble.
And for those that would like to contact you directly, they can do that through your website. Is it ghostmothers.com?
My website, right. I'm right in the middle of updating it, but it's going to be live in just a couple of weeks.
Fantastic. And that's ghostmothers.com.
Right. All one word.
Fantastic. Easy to remember. Well, thank you for the wonderful work you're doing, Kathy. It's so inspiring. I really encourage people to read your book if they haven't read it already. And I think what's so powerful about your book is that there will be so many people reading it that will have those aha moments when the penny drops and they realize, this is the missing piece in my life. This is what happened to me, but I could never put words to it.
I certainly hope so. That's really what I'm about at this point. What I'm passionate about is for people to realize that they're not alone and that this is a journey that a lot of people are on and that there's people out there willing to help and listen and help you move forward. Mm-hmm.